Under hypnosis, he returned to the scene, remembered the exact date of the occurrence, and described the delicious meal. He supplied many details that his conscious mind had forgotten. Many that were not relevant to what we were looking for, but it showed that all the information was there and readily available. The woman's name was Stella, and he said her car was a new 26. The custodian's 1972 Pontiac Firebird. It was almost midnight as they drove on a country road to her apartment, and he recounted their idle conversation. Then he saw what he thought was a fireball, or a shooting star, out of the corner of his eye. They watched as the light in the sky became brighter and appeared to be approaching them. The car's engine suddenly died, and the car stopped in the middle of the road. Stella was frightened, but curiously Tom reacted in a different way. He suddenly felt very tired, and was falling asleep. This was definitely not a normal reaction. I knew his subconscious had remained awake, and I would be able to ask it questions. His subconscious told me that both he and Stella were asleep, and there was a brilliant light surrounding the car and coming in all the windows. The car doors then opened and their sleeping bodies were removed from the car. I asked who took them out. They look like people. One man has brown hair, and the other has blondish hair. They just take us out of the car, and they examine the inside of the car. Then they look at us. They have a thing they hold over us. And then they put us back in the car again. He said they had held his unconscious body upright and moved an instrument up and down his body. It made a clicking sound as they maneuvered it. I assumed he would be heavy for them to lift in that way. He said he probably was, but they did it with little effort. I asked for a description of the instrument. It looks slender like a television antenna, about 13 or 14 inches long, with coils of wire around it. And it flashes color, almost a neon green to a rich purple blue. The colors surround the instrument when it passes over a person, and I can hear a clicking noise. I don't know what it's for though. They were then put back into the car. The motor was now operating, and they were moving down the road. The men and the light were gone. Stella said, "Oh, I must have fallen asleep for a second. I must be really tired." Tom also felt as though he, condensed or distorted time, 27, had dozed off. Stella then looked at her watch, and was startled when she saw the time. "Oh, my goodness. It's 2:30. Didn't we leave there about 12? Oh, I don't know. We better get going." They both dismissed it as they drove to her apartment. Tom felt very tired, as though drained of energy and exhausted. He dozed during the remainder of the ride. At the apartment, she admonished him to be quiet so as to not awaken the neighbors. She showed him his room, and he collapsed totally on the bed. He didn't remember anything else until the telephone woke him the next morning. I asked his subconscious if it knew the reason for the examination by the strange-looking instrument. It replied, "Yes, I know why. It was because of Stella. She works for a company south of Boston that is preparing military secrets for the war in Vietnam. And she has access to all different types of information. I think they really wanted the information from her, not so much from me. I just happened to be there at a time when they contacted her. They monitor her, and she has probably been contacted numerous times in her past. I knew something was wrong, because she always seemed on edge. She is suspicious and doesn't make friends easily. She also has moved a lot. Before she lived in Massachusetts, she lived in California, before that she lived in Hawaii, and before that in Japan. She has traveled all over the world." D. Did they do the same thing to her with the instrument? T. I couldn't see what they were doing to her, because they were doing this with the thing to me. But I know they were doing something else. They have some type of contact with her. D. What was the purpose of that instrument? T. It was similar to a CAT scan type instrument that we have now. It was examining my vital functions. It also measured my brain wave. They affect people by brain waves. But these people were not bad. They weren't cold or unemotional. They were just monitoring her because they were afraid she might be involved in something. It's kind of, 28, the custodians, like espionage. That's one of the reasons they wanted to monitor her, because she knows a lot of information. Stella has a degree in radiobacteriology, and a PhD in electrical engineering. She's a very intelligent woman. D. Were they trying to get information from her in this way? T. No. They already know all that she knows, because they can read her thoughts. But she's important to them for some reason or other. I don't know. D. Why would they be worried if she was involved in espionage? What difference would it make to them? T. She had that problem. She had been approached by people representing the Soviet bloc countries. They were going to give her $100,000, but she never took them up on the offer. She moved. D. Are these beings worried about her getting into some kind of espionage? Is that what you mean? T. No, they weren't worried about her getting involved in espionage or anything like that. She's one of the people they monitor, that's all. And she has access to all different types of scientific treatises and things of this nature. This is why she's monitored. D. This information you're telling me about her, is that something you knew, or is it something you're just now learning? T. Well, I knew she had a degree. And I knew she worked for a company outside Boston. And that it had something to do with electrical engineering. I didn't know she was involved in espionage. D. Then this is something you're just now finding out about her, that you didn't know at the time? T. Yes. She's really bothered by this monitoring, and this is why she travels all over the world. She's trying to get away from them. She left soon after that. I guess she moved from Massachusetts, because I couldn't get in touch with her. D. Then you didn't see her again? Condensed or distorted time, 29. T. No, she had to go. Pause, and then surprise, to Houston. Stella was transferred down to Houston. That's why she left. D. Okay. Did you ever have any experience like this again after that date, with the light or anything? T. No, never again. That was the only time. I thought this was interesting, because it was a case of missing time where the subject was not the object of the being's attention. There was ample room here for fantasy if the subject had been so inclined. But the incident did not even focus on him. Also, it is interesting that he said he never had another similar incident. If he were imagining, he could have expanded quite easily. As it was, there was no elaboration at all. Came across three cases in 1988 and 1989 that suggested a distortion of time, and maybe even moving into another dimension. In the summer of 1987, Lou Farish placed a small ad in a local free supermarket paper asking that anyone who had had unusual incidents relating to UFOs to call him. It was the first and only time he placed such an ad. A woman named Janet called him to relate a strange occurrence the night before in his area. The woman was very apprehensive and did not want to identify herself. She told him she had traveled from Little Rock to her home, which was past the Conway area, in only 15 minutes' time. As it is a distance of approximately 50 miles, the trip normally took 45 minutes. There was no traffic on the four-lane interstate highway the entire way, which was very unusual. When she arrived home, her dogs made a terrible racket, which was not normal for them. Lou said it seemed we had a case of condensed time rather than missing time. The only thing that might associate it with UFOs was that the woman had seen a huge bright light over some trees during the event. She was a I-30, the custodian's businesswoman who did not want to be identified and seemed embarrassed talking about it. Lou then went to her home to talk with her. He found Janet to be an extremely down-to-earth person who had never read or been interested in any way in UFOs. She was sure there must be a common sense, logical explanation for whatever happened, if anything. But she was having difficulty accounting for the speeding up of time, and the light in the sky. Lou asked if she would be willing to undergo hypnosis, but she was very much against it. I told him not to push it, to let her make up her own mind. But if possible, I would like to meet with her. From time to time during the next year, he occasionally had contact with her. She was grasping at all kinds of bizarre explanations to account for the light, even that someone may have been in the trees with mirrors directing lights upward. The explanations were more bizarre than the actual incident. But she was desperately trying to find an explanation she could accept. She also reported having strange dreams of a precognitive nature, and was exhibiting psychic tendencies for the first time in her life. Lou kept trying to arrange a meeting between us, but it didn't work out. Each time she was doing something else that was more important to her, usually involved with her business. Obviously, the experience, although shaking, was not of predominant importance to her. It was just as well that this time elapsed, because when I first heard of her case, the idea of condensed time was a new oddity. But during the intervening period, I came across two more cases which bore a distinct resemblance, and I thought there might be a similarity. Most notably Valerie's and Eddie's, reported in this chapter. My meeting with Janet finally occurred during the Ozark UFO conference in Eureka Springs in April 1989. She had reluctantly agreed to attend, and Lou introduced us. She said there were at least 30 other things she would rather have been doing that weekend, and attending this conference was not one of them. Her interest was simply not there. She had been listening intently to the speakers, and looking at the pictures and slides, condensed or distorted time, 31, presented, but nothing seemed to be like her experience, so she just thought it was a waste of time. We sat in the lobby while the majority of the people were in the conference, so we could have a private conversation. Janet was a very attractive blonde, very much a lady, sophisticated but not overly so. Nicely dressed, and gave the impression she was used to mixing with a well-to-do, well-educated crowd. Yet she seemed very friendly, and did not give the appearance of being snobbish. She relaxed noticeably with me, and immediately began pouring out her story. It seemed almost a relief to finally tell it. She seemed to sense that I would not ridicule her, but was there to try to help her. She decided to finally pursue it, because she had recently been having flashbacks that were adding extra details, and this bothered her. She was positive there was a logical explanation, and was convinced when she found it, it would stop bothering her. She carefully and exactly supplied the details. I was certain she had checked the strange occurrence of condensed time, and she had. She seemed the type who wanted to verify every possible detail to satisfy her own curiosity. She had already double-checked with several people who verified the time she left a restaurant in Little Rock that evening. It was around midnight when she got on 140, and drove down the freeway until she came to the road that turned off to her home. There is only one road in or out of that area, and there is always traffic no matter what time of the day or night. She is very familiar with every twist and turn, and knows every house along the way, since she drives this route almost every day. But that night everything seemed strange and different. There weren't any stars out, and she noticed it was extremely quiet. There was not even the sound of crickets. She distinctly noticed there were no lights in any of the houses, not even the outside mercury vapor lights which always burn. She knew this area very well, and there were always lights in the houses which could be seen for long distances. There was no sound and no sign of life. There was no traffic, which she considered to be very unusual. The custodians. Then she saw the object. It was huge, suspended just above the treetops ahead of her to her right. It was an enormous oblong shape, and glowing a very distinct bright orange color. The glow was contained within the shape and did not emanate outward. There were no markings, no windows, outlines or other lights, only the solid orange oblong shape. When she first saw it, she thought it was the sun setting and the glow and color was coming from reflection off the clouds. Even though the sun had set several hours earlier, this was the first explanation that came to her mind. Then she thought of the possibility of a meteor flash or aurora borealis. She was trying to associate it with something logical, even though she had never seen anything like it in her life. She slowed the car to a crawl to watch it. Normally this would have been hazardous, because of the amount of traffic usually on that road. As the car crawled along, Janet was mesmerized by the huge light. She then saw an object in the road ahead that she thought was probably a dead animal. When she got even with it, she stopped the car to look at it. She was amazed to see it was an ordinary house cat, frozen into an unusual position. It was sitting on its haunches, hair raised, paws in the air, and staring up at the same object that had caught her attention. The animal was not dead, but grotesquely frozen in this strange position staring at the object, almost in a state of suspended animation. This was the only sign of life that she came across, if you want to call it that. She continued on, still driving slowly and staring at the object. Then when she was alongside, it went out, but in an unusual manner. The top and bottom edges slowly closed, leaving a dark space once again above the trees. The two edges came together and blinked out. She demonstrated with her hands, and I got the impression of a giant eye just closing its lids. I questioned her to be sure it did not simply move lower behind the tree line and go out of sight. She said if that had happened, she would have seen the light through the trees as it lowered. She was positive the lower and top edges simply came together and the light was out. There is the possibility that the object may have still been there, only now in a darkened state. Since there, condensed or distorted time, 33, were no stars, the object could have then blended in with the darkness. Whatever happened, she then speeded up and continued home more confused than ever. She said she never felt fright, only awe and amazement and wonder. Her calculating mind had been trying to figure out what it was. When she drove into her driveway, her purebred dogs, which were enclosed in a strongly built pen, were having fits. They were barking and howling, clawing and biting at the fence trying to get out. She said they have never behaved that way before, since the breed was very mild-mannered. They normally never even barked when she or anyone else came in the driveway. But that night when she arrived, they went crazy. I asked if she not colon dot set anything unusual on the car or on herself, and she said she had not. When she entered the house, she was surprised to see the time. She went through the house checking all the clocks against her watch, and they all said the same thing. She had arrived home much too quickly. She estimated 15 minutes, which would have been impossible, especially at the slow rate of speed she was traveling. She woke her husband and asked him to tell her what time the clock said, and admonished him to remember the next day what time she had come home. Janet said she was beginning to have flashbacks that related to the incident. She remembered that something streaked across the highway just in front of the car when she first sighted the object. Also, at the same time, there was a sudden flash of light in the middle of the highway. She described it as similar to a mirror reflection that had flipped suddenly, making a flash or glint of light. She had difficulty describing it, but it reminded her of the reflections in a hall of mirrors in the fun house at a carnival. We never had a hypnosis session, although I am convinced there was more to the story. She did not want to explore the incident further, because she had her life in order. She was very involved with her business, and didn't want anything to take her mind off that, or to create confusion in her life. She would consider the event a curiosity, even though she would probably never understand it, and continue on with her life. The most, 34, the custodians, important thing about my work is that the person continues to live a normal life. I try to help them understand any experiences, and integrate them into their life. If the idea of uncovering more disturbs them, then it is best left alone. I have also told people who are looking for a hypnosis session out of curiosity, that sometimes they may discover things about themselves they wish they had left alone. And once the information is uncovered, it cannot simply be pushed back again. In this case, Janet was probably very wise, because she did not want to cause disruption in her carefully organized life. This is as it should be. I respect the wishes of my clients. In both of the following cases, the subjects had vivid conscious memories of the event. These memories were enhanced and more details supplied under hypnosis. Eddie was a manual laborer in his 30s, who was hesitant to even talk about his experience. He only did so at the urging of his girlfriend. Embarrassed and noticeably apprehensive, he felt uncomfortable with the tape recorder. I set it on the table, and told him in a few minutes he would forget it was even there. When interviewing people, it is easy to forget details, and the recorder ensures that the story will be accurate. It also validates conscious memories and keeps them separate from memories revealed through hypnosis. As we talked, he relaxed and soon became oblivious of the machine. He reported an event that occurred almost 20 years before, when he was a 17-year-old high school senior living in a rural farm community in Missouri. After visiting with a friend in town, he was driving home in his old truck. It was late at night on a rural dirt road where houses are few and far between. When he first spotted the light, he thought it was an outside mercury vapor lamp, which were new in the area. Some of the farmers were replacing the incandescent lamps with these, but it was in a place he wasn't accustomed to seeing a light. As he approached it, he became increasingly aware that it was not an condensed or distorted time 35 outdoor farm light, because it became brighter and was higher in the sky. It moved toward him until it stopped over him, and then followed the truck as he drove. He stuck his head out the window to watch it. About half a mile from home, it suddenly moved ahead of him and hovered over a group of trees. At that time, he could see it was a large lens-type shape. There were orange lights on the inside, and a rotating band revolved around the middle, causing the lights to blink. The bottom of it was a metallic silver color. His curiosity caused him to stop the truck at the bottom of the hill. He got out and sat on the hood of the truck to watch the strange object. It seemed odd to him that he wasn't frightened, but he presumed it was because he had been raised in the country and spent a lot of time outdoors. As he sat on the truck watching, a blue light came out of the bottom and lit up the tops of the trees beneath it. It hovered perfectly still, and although the band rotated, there was no noise. As an estimate of size, he said it was about as wide as the room we were sitting in, which would make it about 25 feet. He sat there for an estimated 15 or 20 minutes watching it. During this time, another strange thing occurred. A neighbor family came by in their beat-up pickup, two adults and a bunch of little kids who lived about 3 miles from his home. The kids were all sitting in the back of the truck. Eddie waved his arms and pointed upwards, frantically trying to get their attention. He knew they had to see him, because his truck was partly in the road. But they drove on without even slowing. He said it was almost as though he was invisible. Later, he was tempted to ask them why they didn't stop, but he couldn't bring himself to talk to anyone about the incident. When he arrived home, he ran up the stairs screaming. His parents were asleep, and he scared them by waking them so suddenly. He made them go to the window and look out, but the light had reduced to the size of a mercury vapor light. In an instant, it blinked out and disappeared. Whatever his parents saw was a pale comparison to the large craft he had seen. During that entire year, there were many sightings in the area, some seen by police, but he never heard of one as close as 36, the custodians he had experienced. He couldn't bring himself to talk about it, because he was afraid of ridicule. I was the kind of kid that didn't need that kind of publicity. I could identify with that feeling, because I also live in an isolated rural community, and you are very conscious of what your neighbors think about you. He said, I've had to live with this for years, thinking I'm probably just nuts, or I had some psychological reason to fictitiously create this story. Although that's not true. I saw this thing. It's been a battle. Not wanting to embrace the idea of what I saw, or admit what it was. That thing was so close, I would say a good strong BB gun could have hit it. Every time I tried to tell someone, I felt that down deep the person probably would think I was crazy. I just didn't want to expose myself to that type of reaction. This is the same feeling many people have about reporting what they have seen. Eddie had never read any books on UFOs prior to this event. As a farm boy, he was more interested in hunting and trapping. It was years before he looked through books trying to find something that resembled what he saw. I felt some kind of identity. I'd find pieces of it, but there was nothing particularly like what I experienced. I got the impression Eddie seemed uncomfortable revealing as much as he did. I think he still felt he might be ridiculed, and he didn't want to be put in that position. I had the impression it took a lot for him to tell me, a stranger, about something he had kept hidden all those years. He now felt relaxed enough with me to agree to hypnosis. I made an appointment for the next week, to see if we could get any further details. Nothing much was added under hypnosis. He had remembered the event accurately. I decided to ask Eddie's subconscious for more details that his conscious mind would not have knowledge of. If the subject is in a deep enough level of trance, this can be done, and often surprising answers will come forth. I wanted to know if anything had happened that Eddie was not consciously aware of. His answer was that there had been an infusion. He had been given fragments, pieces, bits of condensed or distorted time, 37, information. And he was given direction. He kept referring to infusion, and when I asked what he meant, he used a word that is unknown to me. I can only spell it phonetically, contrivering. The word did not make any sense to me, and he also said he did not know what it meant. He said the bits and pieces of information were coming from the ship, and would help in his expansion and growth. It was a physical thing, and the information was being absorbed by the cells of the body, although he had no idea what the information was. Many people have thought because they had a sighting, they might also have had an abduction experience that they did not remember. I have found that does not always occur. In some cases the sighting is simply enough, because subliminal information is passed without actual physical contact being made. It all occurs on a subconscious level. Thus, many people who think they have merely had a sighting, actually had much more, and have been influenced in ways they could not have conceived. I asked why this had happened to Eddie, and the answer was that he was vulnerable. He was impressionable and naive, and this made the contact easier. It was more difficult to get through to people who are more material-minded or worldly-oriented. I was told vulnerable or innocent were good descriptions of easy contacts. And surprisingly, it didn't matter if the person believed in these objects, because the goal was to get the individual's attention. The occupants were looking for an opening, a way to get into the being, the core of the person, so a seed could be planted. I was curious about what type of seed he meant, and he gave a strange answer: the seed of their being, of their oneness. I'm not separate. Oneness, not two, but one. The seed, or idea, is planted in the psyche by light infusion. It is in the cells, the memory of oneness. It can be planted anywhere there is an opening. We are all one with them. We are not created as two, but one. They want us to know this, and on this night he had an opportunity to see us. He was a good candidate to implant information in. There apparently were other times during Eddie's life when he was unsuspectingly taught. Since the lessons and 38, the custodians' concepts went directly to his subconscious, he had no conscious memory of them. He only remembered unusual experiences involving animals behaving in an abnormal manner. The contact usually occurred through the eyes of animals, because animals were willing subjects and could be used in this manner. Eddie saw, through the element of surprise, the spirit of oneness in the animal's eyes. In some cases it was not a real animal, but an illusion. This was done to find the vulnerable places in people. The person must be quiet. The person must stop his world. They could make people see something that's not there, through the element of surprise. They take people off guard. But I thought people aren't on guard all the time. The answer was, you'd be surprised. People are always on guard. We have to find ways to take the person by surprise. When the person focuses on something, a craft or an animal, when we get their attention, we can stop their world. Then the infusion can take place. We use the element of surprise. If the person is going about their normal, everyday routine, we can't get their attention or focus, and it doesn't work. Their attention must be diverted in some way. I said that meant the beings had to be constantly monitoring, to find these little cracks. He said they are. This also could be an explanation of why they appear invisible to people who are not involved in the experience. Their world has not been stopped. He said, not only could animals be used to accomplish this, but also dreams. In this case they would be controlled dreams and have unusual characteristics. Lucid dreams. The type that are more real than usual. Many times they are accompanied with physical sensations throughout the dream. These remain until the person is awakened. Many times they can be colorful dreams. Or fearful dreams, but dreams of unusual character. It doesn't matter what the dream is about. It will be more vivid, and have the quality of vividness even after they awaken. The dream may have a fear emotion, because sometimes the dreaming person must be caught unaware, much the same way the awakened person must be caught unaware. Fear is the most powerful, condensed or distorted time, 39, emotion, and can be used, at times, to generate the stopping of the world, both in the dreaming and the awakened. By creating a strong emotion, it is easier for us to have contact. The element of surprise and the element of fear trigger the awakening.